Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Deep Dive. Today, we bring you an in-depth look at Silent Hill 2, a survival horror game about madness, punishment, and our inner demons and monsters. It was developed by Konami, directed by Tsuboyama Masashi, written by Owaku Hiroyuki, with a crazy, amazing score composed by Yamaoka Akira. And our guest today is Stevie Ray Tron, freelance illustrator and also the creator of Weatherwax Coven. And of course, she is a huge fan of Silent Hill 2. I'd just like to note that Silent Hill 2 is rated R, and while we have talked about some heavier subjects in past episodes, this one's going to be pretty intense just because it's a horror game and there were a lot of really graphic and heavy scenes, and it is one of my favorites of all time and totally worth a playthrough, but diver's discretion is advised. As always, we recommend you play the game before listening because we're going to dive deep, and in the abyss, there be spoilers. And now, without further ado, let's descend.
Three, two, one, go.
Oh. I wonder if we can get away with having the ambient sound while we do the podcast. I don't know if we're allowed to do that.
We may be able to. I have a request for you.
Yes.
At the beginning. So I watched part of your one episode with Cap about Tender Loving Care, which sounds like such a creepy game to me.
It was pretty creepy. It was a surprise, actually, is what it was. We weren't expecting it to be as good as it was.
Mm-hmm. When you Google it, the screenshots just look really porny.
Yeah, it was. I'm not going to lie. It was pretty porny. Like, there were moments where I was like, is this the day Captain gets banned on Twitch? Like, what's happening here? And he'll tell you the same thing.
What I was thinking is, I'd like to tell people about, like, my experience with Silent Hill, which is, like, I didn't play it until I was, like, 29. Like, yeah, I had no experience with it, and then I played it, and I was, like, I hated horror games, and but I'd like to share that, and I'd like to, like, make a brief, like, no spoilers plea to people who have never experienced it to, like, experience it. So, should I just tell you the story?
Yeah.
Okay.
However you would like. God, this music is really creepy.
I know.
Okay.
I had never played any survival horror games at all. I had played 2 seconds of a very old Resident Evil game, and there was like a corner and a fixed camera and a zombie, and I just chickened out and I couldn't deal with it. So like I like avoided horror games. And then I happened to get to watch a friend play Silent Hill 3, and I got like oddly sucked in. And through the process of watching Silent Hill 3, I came to find it really like fascinating. And I think this was in like 2015. I was like almost 30 at the time. Like I really missed the early boat of Silent Hill. And I think that it was really good to like experience Silent Hill 3 before Silent Hill 2, because it was like, for me, what people in the original days had when they played Silent Hill 1 and then Silent Hill 2. It's like I got familiar with the way the game worked, with the mist world and the other world.
Yeah. And... oh my god, the music at that moment. Holy crap. Okay, I don't care. I'm putting the music behind in this story. That was like perfect.
I would love to talk about Silent Hill 3 with you at another point.
Yes.
We'll it's part of like. Them.
Did you ever play The Room? I think I asked you this a million times. You haven't played Silent Hill 4 yet, right? Right.
I haven't played.
Trying to get
I have. Yep. Yeah, I haven't played 1 or 4, and I will play those and we can talk about them. Mm-hmm. I knew some of the lore from 1, and like obviously the experience of 3, and those two are related for people who haven't played them, but I won't talk about that in any more depth right now. But the experience of Silent Hill 2 is really interesting because it was the first one where I like picked up the controller and I was like, I'm gonna try. And I was so... can I swear?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Originally, I started the podcast trying to be as family friendly as possible, but it's me. So, you know, things have slipped in. Yep. Go for it.
I was so fucking scared. in the beginning part of playing the game. Like, even just... It just took me getting into the first, like, main area, into the apartments, and, like, getting through the apartments a little bit before I, like, got over that fear. Like, I got used to the mechanics, and I knew that I wasn't gonna die, and I knew how to, like, have health and stuff. And so, like, the first couple sessions, I played, like, 20 minutes and stopped. And then I played 20 minutes and stopped.
That's something I hear a lot, actually, for Silent Hill 2, for people. They played for a bit, and then they couldn't play all the way through.
I think it was a feat that I got back into it during those early stages, where I was really, like, scared and bored. But then once I got into it, I was just playing for hours and hours, and, like, I just, like, consumed the game so quickly. And my experience, like, as an adult person who had no idea what I was getting into, of the reveals in this story and the, like, really amazing in-depth character arcs, I was just it was, like, probably one of my, like, top five, maybe top gaming experiences of my entire life.
Mine too.
And mine it doesn't matter that it's a game from, you know, 2000 or whenever, it was just as amazing. I always want to tell people, like, if you have no experience with Silent Hill, you have an amazing gift that you can go have this experience if you want to. So if you're listening to this and you haven't played Silent Hill,
turn it off.
Yeah,
turn it off and go play.
Yeah, and then come back and hang out with us.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell, I'd like to share my experience with you.
Yeah. And
part of it, actually, I've played the Silent Hill 2 for the first time because I had a crush on somebody who was a huge fan. And I'm a chicken shit. I can't stand anything scary. But, you know, he had said, oh, I'm playing this game, and it's really, really, like, horrifying. And it was Silent Hill 1 that he was playing. He said, it's probably the best game I've ever played. And then Silent Hill, I forget when Silent Hill 2 released. Do you happen to know this based on your amazing Silent Hill knowledge? Okay.
No.
I thought I'd ask. But when Silent Hill 2 came out, or either it came out and he was about to play it. And so I said, okay, well, I will also get it and I will play it. And we can play it together, because it was a long distance friendship. Like, we met on a role playing forum and wrote stories together. So,
so cute.
Yeah, it was just an online friendship for a very, very long time. So I said, okay, well, I'll get the game as well, and I'll play it. But we didn't play it at the same time necessarily as each other. It's not like we were in chat, or, you know, there was no voice chat or anything like that really at the time. So it would just be like, where are you in the game? Oh, I'm here. And then we'd talk about it whenever it came up. So I was by myself when I started to play Silent Hill 2 for the first time. And yeah, just like you, it grabbed me right away. And it's a whole other experience when you're holding that controller.
Mm-hmm. I would not change that experience for anything.
Yeah, same. So what ended up happening was, I also spent a lot of time, you know, floating around, either at my friend's house or they'd come over. We were theater kids, so we'd have like, you know, huge kind of like hangout parties where we would just be with each other all the time. It wasn't like we needed to be doing something in particular. So I remember being at my friend, shout out to you, Riley. I remember being at my friend Riley's house, and I was just in his room, and I was playing the game. I booted it up there for the first time, and I was like, okay, I'll just sit here and play this while they're doing whatever it is they're doing out there. And I'm playing the game, and it's like, my hands are sweating. It's all dark in his room. I turned off all the lights. I've got it going, and I'm like, what the hell is this game? And then my friend Diane comes in the room. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, she opens the door. I'm terrified, sitting in the corner of his bed, like, hunched over with this controller, like, oh, my God. And she's like, are you okay? What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm playing this really fucked up game. Like, oh, my God. And then she's like, really? And then so she comes over on the bed. And, you know, fast forward 20, 30 minutes later, Riley comes in. It's the same thing. He opens the door. He sees two girls huddled up on the bed, like, oh, my God. What are you guys doing? Oh, my God. We're playing this really fucked up game. And then eventually it became this, like, group experience where I would sit with a controller and we would all play Silent Hill together, which you might think that it makes it a little bit less scary, but it didn't at all. It was just absolutely horrifying. So I have particularly fond memories of Silent Hill 2 because of that experience, because it was like me and my friends, and we played all the way through the game together, and then we started to do the same for Silent Hill 3 and 4 when it came out. So it's just, I have really fond memories of that. Mm-hmm. And of course, for some reason, I was the only one. I got stuck with the controller like all the time. So I'd be like sweating. I'd have pit stains because I'm like, oh my God, I'm so scared. Can someone else take the controller? But nobody else would do it. So,
well, these games with the fixed camera angles really made it being the one driving was in itself a psychologically terrifying experience.
Absolutely. It's funny because people say now, you know, what about the new Silent Hill games? And I say, like, I tried to play the new one, the newest
one.
We played the one on the Xbox a little bit, but also the newest one, which was the...
Is it Downpour?
Yeah, that one. Yep, that one. Where he's in the prison, right?
Yeah,
so it's super interesting. Like, I feel like the story elements are there. Like, in the beginning, that first scene was pretty horrifying. There's just something about being able to control the camera and having control or not worrying that my weapons are going to break. So, I don't know. It just didn't grab me the way the other ones did. And I think that Silent Hill 2, there's something special about it because it was clunky mechanics, because it was a fixed camera. Mm-hmm. You immediately feel like you're not in control, which you're not. And that's a gift. The time that it came out was great for that.
And you're also just like these everyday people who are not expected to have any kind of combat skills.
Yeah.
You know, the best you can do is swing a piece of wood.
A plank of wood. Yeah. For the first 2 hours of the game, I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after 4, moved away from what people call Team Silent and gave it to different studios and different teams to make the games. And generally, like, the hardcore fans say those are the games that are not Silent Hill games because they're much more combat focused and much more action oriented.
Yeah, they went down the path of Resident Evil, which is not bad. So, you know, Resident Evil games can be skipped, but they didn't have the terror that I feel like the original Silent Hills did. Like, there's just some really disturbing content in those games. And I'm not saying, like, it's necessarily graphically horrifying or...
There was a trend of all these game franchises getting more action-y. Like, Silent Hill did it and Resident Evil did it. And then we should probably just talk about this another time, but PT came out.
Oh my God.
And PT.
I still have it on my PlayStation. I refuse to sell my PlayStation because it has PT. I'm probably going to play it again for Halloween, but yeah. It's...
Can I come over sometime?
Yes. Wait, have you never played it?
Nope.
Oh my God. You're coming over. You are coming over. We're having a Silent Hill party.
Perfect.
I also have Silent Hill 4. So, you know, next time you come for a prolonged period, you could just come over and I'll just watch you play.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
So PT came out and I can't remember who I was watching, but basically the idea is that PT brought a resurgence of this psychological, like, slow paced, slow burn horror back, and that Resident Evil, the most recent one.
Mm-hmm.
What was that one? 7?
Yes, Resident Evil 7. Biohazard, I think.
That Resident Evil 7 really took a lot of, like, inspiration from the success of PT and this, like, resurgence of, like, the just psychological horror of it. That's exciting. So hopefully, maybe even Konami at some point will return to those roots.
Yeah, even if it's not Konami, I would love to just see the same team or the same style. Have you seen, I think Abbey Road got canceled, actually, but have you seen Abbey Road stuff?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God, girl. Okay. I always do this. It's not Abbey, it's Allison Road. They have outright said it is straight up we love Silent Hill. We loved PT. This is basically PT got canceled, so we're just going to do something that we hope is similar. And you can see right in that opening shot on the website where it focuses on the door and the lights are swinging. That's such a Silent Hill thing to do. And the dusty mirrors and the cruddy bathroom. So yeah, that's going to be great.
This looks amazing.
Yeah, so I've got some hopes up for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this already. Yeah. This is amazing.
So, question, what is it about the slow burn psychological horror do you think that gripped you so much? Like specifically Silent Hill 2. What about it grabbed you? Was it like watching a train wreck, or what was it like playing that game?
I think there is a thing in storytelling that is the unifying theme between literally everything that I love, which is the complex characters who you get to discover their complexity over time. And so really it was about these people and sort of, this is the perfect metaphor for Silent Hill 2, but going deeper.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you're just jumping in endless holes and getting deeper into their psyche and learning more and more about what actually brought them to the point where they're at right now. And there's so much artful visual metaphors. It's a whole, I feel like, multimedia experience.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
The audio, like the imagery and the story itself, they all work together to make something that is, it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, I agree.
So, and I think that it was like, I think it was probably the music that really got me, though.
Yeah, the music is like some of the best. You can listen to the music by itself, and it's kind of creepy, but it's not as creepy as when you're playing the game. Like, it's just, there's just something really magical about the mechanical noises that he made with the music, and just like the clanking and everything. It's it got me hooked on horror ambience music. Like, I will listen to that shit on my own now. Sometimes it freaks me out, but like I will put that on and I will just enjoy that kind of like tones and stuff.
And there's a thing about the music where it doesn't match the world in some ways.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times in games and in movies, they have either a symphonic score that is telling you what to feel, or they have music that is like directly fitting the specific environment.
Yeah.
But this music is fitting the psychological environment.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I know there are lots of games, and I feel like for me, and this is just me personally, but sound has a major impact on my experience of whatever game that I'm playing. So either, you know, voices, voice acting, or good music usually is great. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's got to be, I don't know what I'm trying to say. It doesn't have to be, you know, perfectly composed or anything like that. It just has to suit the game. And I feel like I feel like Silent Hill 2 nailed that, and nailed that really early. I don't feel like many other games were doing that, other than traditional maybe JRPGs. I remember really being immersed because of the wonderful music. One that comes to mind is Final Fantasy IX, Freya's theme. I used to put that on repeat. I don't know if you played any JRPGs, actually.
No, I have not.
Oh, wow, yeah. So I grew up on JRPGs and then switched to, like, Silent Hill 2 was my first horror game that I had ever played.
Mm-hmm. So I grew up on, like, first-person shooters like Doom
Quake
and stuff. So my experience of role-playing games was like, this is slow. Which is amazing to me why something later in life like Silent Hill would have such an impact on me. And I'm just like, it's art.
So we're going to talk about Silent Hill today. And we're going to dive into pretty much everything that we can, plot analysis, character analysis, stuff like that, which we don't normally do for the games that we cover. We normally just talk about how it made us feel and things like that. But this there's so much to this game that I feel like we got to talk about all of it, because like the moment I realized the depth to this game, it skyrocketed to, you know, my top five favorites of all time. So the voice acting in this game was off. And I actually kind of love it now. Mm-hmm. When I was first playing it, I was like, what the hell is going on? You know, it's like they didn't get any context for their lines. Turns out they didn't get any context for their lines. But also, I love it now. I wouldn't change it mm-hmm. for the world because it made it creepier
yeah.
to me. We start with James. And the opening scene is James looking for his wife. And that's Mary. And he received a letter, I think. Yep, he received a letter from Mary. So the opening scene is him reading his letter from Mary about how she's at the town where they... Was it their honeymoon or just a vacation that they had together? It's been a long time since I played the game.
She says, I'm in our special place.
Mm-hmm. I see that town. Silent Hill. You promised you'd take me there again someday. But you never did. Well, I'm alone there now. In our special place. Waiting for you.
And he's like, What is our special place? There are so many places in Silent Hill that could have been our special place. I have no idea what she means.
I got a letter. The name on the envelope said Mary. My wife's name. It's ridiculous. Couldn't possibly be true. That's what I keep telling myself. A dead person can't write a letter. Mary died of that damn disease 3 years ago. So then, why am I looking for her? Our special place. What could she mean? This whole town was our special place. Does she mean the park on the lake? We spent the whole day there. Just the two of us staring at the water. Could Mary really be there? Is she really alive? Waiting for me?
So yeah, we start with James, and then as he enters Silent Hill, it's, you know, covered in a fog, and then some crazy stuff starts happening. Monsters start showing up, and eventually there's this kind of like other reality that he slips into on occasion and then comes back, and he's like, the whole game he's trying to find Mary, his wife, and all this weird stuff keeps happening. Well, turns out, as you're playing the game, there's a reason for that. I'm actually going to turn it over to you, if you'd like.
Yeah, so James goes into Silent Hill, and the mechanic of Silent Hill is that it is a place that manifests your deepest trauma or repressed issues to you through the form of monsters that are... monsters and other, like, abstract,
it's like your punishment,
events.
Right? They say if you find yourself in Silent Hill, you're being sort of punished for something that you've done. However, you don't know this when you start up Silent Hill 2. In fact, I don't know if you know it explicitly in any of the games. Do they tell you that? It's just lore you learn after you've played a couple of games. You say, oh, okay.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Yeah.
So James goes into this town
and
he starts to encounter these, like, horribly misfigured feminine monsters of multiple different types. There are lying figures which, like, vomit on you and have their, like, heads covered and their arms, like, wrapped up as
holy
if they were, like...
crap, I just realized what that was.
My god, let's just say it. So those represent Mary's sickness that she... Mary's dead. She died of a horrible illness, and that's all we know at that point. And so these lying figures are, like, they're, like, writhing and vomiting, and that represents her, like, illness
her
that she had.
An illness, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, I didn't... Oh, man, I just realized that. Holy crap.
There's also the mannequins, which yep. are like the, it's like two sets of mannequin legs, and that's like obviously a sexualization and objectification of like women. James is pretty canonically known to have had like sexual frustration when his wife was sick for like 3 years. That relates to the reveal, which I'm gonna do a small like overview of the game, and then I'll yep. give the reveal. It feels like it needs some dramatic pause or something. So and then there's nurses, which are a very common monster in Silent Hill. You discover them in the hospital, where you get to a little bit later. So basically, you go into the town, you walk through the foggy streets, you go into the apartments, you end up bouncing between multiple different locations. You go into a bar, you go into a bowling alley, you go into a hospital. And in each of these different places, you encounter different elements of the story. The nurses are in the hospital. They are actually the first sexualized nurses. In Silent Hill 1, they were not sexualized. And that is because of James's trauma. They're called bubblehead nurses.
Oh, really?
They have this like plastic over their faces. Like a shiny like plastic, and they're like boobs
suffocation.
I heard a thought that they're meant to look somewhat like condoms.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know how much I buy into that, but they're definitely like, it's like ominous.
I don't
know.
I think that's a very interesting interpretation, but I think I'd actually prefer the asphyxiation.
The thought was that they were supposed to like explode when you killed them.
Oh, yeah.
When you kill them. No, that the technology at the time wasn't good enough to accomplish what they wanted to accomplish along those lines. Some of this stuff is like, there's a lot of like mythology around Silent Hill, and I'm not sure if that is like for real or just mythology. So
yeah, where it's like, oh, this is why they did this. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they also represent the hospital. So they're not only yeah. are they're like sexualized other women besides Mary, and they're like the caretakers in the hospital where he would have spent a lot of time in the 3 years that she was sick. And so you go through the world, you discover these different like sexualized female monsters, and then you start to discover that there's something much deeper wrong with James than just him looking for his dead wife, which is already yeah. something to worry about him over. It leads you through this series of events that basically show you that James killed his wife. And that's the big reveal. It's so hard not to dance around that, because it is such a moving and like intense moment. I barely ever even talk about it because it is so intense for me.
Well, because the way that I feel like I feel like it took me by surprise, which is difficult to do when it's kind of like this kind of a setting in a game. I'm always, because I know it's a horror game, I'm always looking for, okay, where's the twist? But mm-hmm. I feel like part of that is because of this game, mm-hmm. you know, where it's like, oh, she's dead. And then as you're slowly seeing all of these things, like there's a monster in the game of somebody literally strapped to a bed, like a hospital bed, and they're writhing around and moving and, you know, jerking around and like, oh my God. And the moment yeah. you realize that he killed his wife, everything just clicks and makes sense, because the reveal mm-hmm. is very far at the end of the game. And then I just feel like in that moment I went, oh my God, that's why it's showing this person strapped to this bed, struggling around, jerking around as if someone was suffocating them. Like, oh my yeah. God, how cool yeah. is that? But I mean, yeah. I mean, not cool, that whatever, you guys know what I mean. I just thought the art in that, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. So, and James meets this like woman who looks exactly like Mary.
Yeah. And that's Laura. Yeah.
Maria.
Right.
And she's like, she's a stripper. She works at the strip club. Yeah. And she's like, I can be your fantasy. Like, this town is scary. Can you take care of me?
Yeah.
And so like portions of the game, she's following you around. And she's a really interesting thing, because people talk about like what is real and what's not real in Silent Hill.
Yeah.
And in this game, there's like, there are other characters who are experiencing their own psychological torture.
Yep.
In the town, there's Eddie and there's Angela. And there's also a little girl named Laura who is seems to be, it seems like she's just in a normal town. Like, it's not a horror town for her.
Yeah.
Which is really, really freaking cool.
Yeah.
And Eddie and Angela, we can talk about them, but the one thing I really love is that for a moment you get to discover what their other worlds look like.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. Like, we should mention that. There's just so much in this game. So you meet Eddie. I think before we move on directly to Eddie, I think we should maybe mention that Maria is, in my opinion, Maria's not real. She's not there seeing another, you know, world or anything like that. Maria is literally just another demon that's there to torment James. She looks just like his dead wife, except she's maybe what he wanted her to be. So that, which is awkward. But yeah, she's a very sexualized version of his wife. So
But yeah, anyway. I feel like Maria is a manifestation of what James feels Mary's wrath to be like. Like, she's taunting him in the sexualized way, like, knowing that he wanted that and not her or something like that.
Yeah.
And at the end, there's several points where she, like, yells at him. Like, you're supposed to take care of me at one point.
Yeah.
She, like, yells at him. And I'd like to get to a point and talk about the endings, because Maria shows up in 3 of the 4 endings. And Mary shows up in 1 of them. And I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if now is the right time.
Yeah,
let's
talk about Eddie and everybody, and then we'll revisit Maria. Okay, so we'll start with Eddie. And you meet him in the apartments. And the way you stumble across him is you hear this, like, vomiting sound, I think. Mm-hmm. Right? And then you kind of have to wander your way through the apartment. And by this point, I'd just like to say, you've run into Pyramid Head. You've seen that horrific scene where you have to hide in the closet and then watch him. It's just like this whole, like, what the hell is happening? And you're jumping pretty much at any sound. So when you hear this human, like, vomiting sound, at least I panicked a little, and I stood outside the door for a very long time before I got the courage to go inside. But when you do, it's almost like this weird relief because, oh, it's a human. And, you know, he's vomiting in a toilet. Okay, it's not too bad. But yeah, that's Eddie.
It wasn't me. I didn't do it.
Do what?
I didn't do anything. I swear. He was like this when I got here.
My name's James. James Sunderland.
Eddie.
Eddie. Who's that dead guy in the kitchen?
I didn't do it. I swear I didn't kill anybody.
You're not friends with that red pyramid.
Red pyramid thing? I don't know what you're talking about. Honest. I did see some weird-looking monsters. They scared the hell out of me, so I ran in here.
Well, I guess this place isn't too safe either. What happened here, anyway?
I told you. I don't know. I'm not even from this town. I just...
You too, huh? Something just brought you here, right?
Yeah, you could say that.
Eddie is like, he's overweight and somewhat childish. I don't actually know how old Eddie is supposed to be, but he's got like the, fashion appropriate for the era, like fuzzy wristbands, like a pop punk guy, and he's got like a backwards baseball cap, and he's got these like piercing blue eyes and this like somewhat wild face, and he's vomiting into this toilet, and outside in the apartment room there is a fridge with a dead body in it. And Eddie says, I didn't do it. I didn't kill him. He doesn't even give you a chance to ask him. He just immediately says, I didn't do it.
It wasn't me. Yeah. It was like that when I got here or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And James, like, tries to ask him, like, do you see what's going on here? And Eddie doesn't really engage him on that. So it doesn't really give James a sense of if what he's experiencing is what Eddie's experiencing. And then eventually James is just like, okay, well, please take care of yourself. Please be safe. I'm going to go now.
Yeah.
And then you leave him.
God. But it's what kills me is that you can still hear him vomiting when you leave.
I know. It's
so it's
disgusting.
Just
kind of
like, oh, God. Yeah. So now, Eddie was bullied. Like, I think there's a line where he says, you know, I may be a disgusting fat piece of shit, but it doesn't matter. Basically, it's all the same once we all die. Which I thought was interesting. Now, why do you think he's vomiting in the toilet?
I think that there is some, it's hard for me to say because, like, it's hard for me to detangle it from, like, actual real-life weight issues, right?
Yeah.
So, like, him vomiting and, like, him being seen eating, I think are shorthands for his, like, weight issues.
Yep, I think so, too. And I definitely think that it was a binge and a purge thing that they were showing you.
It could have been that he was upset from the dead body, which I think is another implication.
The surface level. I think you're supposed to just assume that, but I actually think because it's his like demons, right? Like in his world, like this is what he's experiencing, and we know that they didn't really care about trigger warnings because that you know the rape scene in the beginning. So I feel like they were definitely telling a very specific story with Eddie, and that he was, you know, being bullied. And he says a couple of things. I think he says not only does he call himself a fat ass, but I think he calls himself a waste of skin. Like all of his dialogue is basically about how he feels that he's been bullied because of his body.
And he's very angry.
He's very angry and he's really mad about it. But I definitely think the pizza, the fact that he had a whole pizza and then he's vomiting is I definitely think that was a binge and a purge thing that they were trying to show with him.
James finds him with the pizza and he says, "How can you eat at a time like this?" Yep. And Eddie's just like, "What do you mean?"
Yeah, like what? There's nothing going on here. But yeah, I think in Eddie's world, he's just surrounded by people who are just bullying him, basically, who are just saying all this stuff is happening. And he doesn't react well to that.
So the canon for what happened to Eddie in the real world before he came to Silent Hill.
Yeah.
If I can go there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go there. Let's go all the way through each character and kind of like how they... Yeah. This is great format, actually.
What happened to him is that he killed a dog. It was the dog of a football player who had been bullying him. And then I believe he shot that football player in the knee.
Yes.
And that... He never actually killed anyone, but he keeps ending up in situations in Silent Hill where he is killing people.
Yeah.
And in the final room where you fight him, you come to him. It's like in a little antechamber, but before a large freezer room. And he's like, there's a dead guy and he is manic. And he says he was saying horrible things to me. And so I shot him and it felt good.
Yeah. And I think, is that at the cafeteria? Like in the prison?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's the one time you see him before that, actually.
Oh, okay.
So I skipped that. So you see him in the cafeteria one final time before the boss fight, which I think is really interesting because it's the cafeteria. Like you see him throwing up in the bathroom. Yep.
He's always eating pizza with Laura. Yep.
Yep. Or he's in the cafeteria at the prison.
Yep. It's very, very clear what they were going for, I think. It's interesting because they just took time to show the slow descent into madness for each character or for each side character that was also in Silent Hill. So By the time you get to the prison, which is really fucked up, by the way, like, yep, that was probably the most terrifying experience I've ever had in a game, was the prison in Silent Hill 2. But by the time you get to the prison, you don't really realize it until maybe after the game is over, but you're just as mad as Eddie. Mm-hmm. You're just as insane, but we just don't see it. And we're looking at, you know, Eddie or, you know, Angela, and we're not realizing our descent into madness is along the same track. But in that moment, Eddie, I think it's just kind of like, he's absolutely snapped, and he's like, oh yeah, I think he's like slumped down, and he's muttering like, oh, how easy it was to kill someone. He was like, you just put a gun to their head and pow.
Killing a person ain't no big deal. Just put the gun to their head, pow.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then, there's a dead body on the table of the cafeteria, which I also think is pretty interesting that it's on the table. Mm-hmm. And
he says he didn't do it, I think, in that moment as well.
No, I think he actually says he defends it. At this point, he's like, the guy had it coming, and he was making fun of me with his eyes, even though he didn't say anything.
You killed him?
But it wasn't my fault. He made me do it.
Calm down, Eddie. Tell me what happened.
That guy, he had it coming. I didn't do anything. He just came after me. Besides, he was making fun of me with his eyes, like that other one.
Just for that, you killed him?
What do you mean, just for that?
Eddie, you can't just kill someone because of the way they looked at you.
Oh yeah? Why not? Till now, I always let people walk all over me.
Oh man. Which is very frightening. It's very frightening. Right. I found it very frightening whether or not Eddie was going to lose it and attack me, you know? And every time I walked away from an encounter with Eddie or Angela, I was like, oh, thank God. I just kind of felt this relief.
And it's interesting to me that Eddie is a boss. So in that final room, you see him. And what you see is different. It's his other world,
yes,
I believe.
Yes, I agree. Because it's full of like hanging
and
corpses.
Foggy. Yeah.
Like, but they're hanging this, like they're slaughtered like meat, like food. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very, very interesting. So before we dive into his other world, we might just want to explain.
Yes.
I know we mentioned briefly that there was a slip into another reality and then back again. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about that for a second. So
the other world,
bum, bum, bum. So as you're playing the game, it's triggered by an air raid siren.
Yes. Yeah. And it happens quite late in Silent Hill 2. It's not until you get into the hospital that you go into the other world for the first time. And it is, I'm sorry, I just took that over. Is that okay?
Yeah, no, go for it. No, that's perfect.
It is basically a very wet and like flooded and rusted kind of space. It's very dark. There is less light. When you're outside in the other world, it is like not foggy. It's just dark. And you can't see. It's so dark. You can't see very far beyond you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's places where things are actually literally flooded in the hotel in the end. Like, the basement of the hotel is flooded. Ugh. And you're, like, walking through, like, waist-high water. It's very different than all the other Silent Hill games that tend to have more of a bloody and rusted other world. This one is definitely, like, muted and dark and almost more blues in its colors.
Oh, God.
Not so red. Is there anything you want to say about his other world?
No, I think you covered it real well. Other than the hanging meat corpses and how it still relates to food, you know, like he's butchering these people. But that's it. And we mentioned that already. So,
and I do think that Eddie's world has like a green fog to it.
Yeah, it does.
There's like a green smoke or tinge to everything.
Yeah.
Which
is interesting.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. But also, like, I feel like it's funny because I feel like sometimes on an initial look, you might say, oh, they did that just to differentiate. So you realized that your visually you are in not your other world, but you're maybe potentially in Eddie's other world. But then when you actually break it down, it's like, no, ma'am, this is just what they wanted. Oh, it's real good.
Yeah.
The final encounter with Eddie is a little bit disturbing because he's got his gun out, he's pointing it at his own head and other people, and he's just, well, you basically, and he's waving it around, and he says, if anybody makes fun of me, I'll kill them. And he's just basically shouting every horrible thing that was ever said to him.
He always busted my balls, you fat, disgusting piece of shit. You make me sick. Fat ass, you're nothing but a waste of skin. You're so ugly, even your mama don't love you. Well, maybe he was right. Maybe I am nothing but a fat, disgusting piece of shit. But you know what? It doesn't matter if you're smart, dumb, ugly, pretty. It's all the same once you're dead. And the corpse can't laugh.
And then you have to fight him.
That's when he tells you that he killed the dog and he shot the football player.
Right, okay.
And then you go into the room. So you start in the antechamber, and then you go into the room with all the hanging corpses. And he just starts... I believe he actually says... He's like, oh, James, like, you actually never liked me. You've actually been laughing at me this whole time.
Yep.
And then he attacks you. And you have to fight him until he dies. And then James just sort of, like, stumbles over and is like, I killed a human.
Yeah.
And then he says, Mary, are you really here?
Yeah.
Like, there's no break. He just goes literally from, I killed a human, to, Mary, could you really be here? And you're like, if you don't know the reveal at this point, you just don't realize that it seems like such a strange, like, change of thought immediately. But from him to go, like, the realization of killing a human to immediately thinking about Mary, if you know what happened, you just go, oh.
Yeah. And
that's fucked up.
I had to just look this up real quick. The last scene, I just remember it bothering me and I couldn't remember why, and I know exactly why now. So that cut, when they show that you've killed Eddie, they don't show his face. They show him lying down and with the gun in his hand, and James is leaning over him, and blocking Eddie's face is another meat corpse. And I just remember visually being like, holy shit, the symbolism in that moment. Like, oh my God. It was really cool and also disturbing. And I wanted to look up the last thing that he says to James, which is, don't get all holy on me, James. This town called you too. You and me, we're the same. We're not like other people. Don't you know that? And then he says, let's party. And I think that's that's the fight then that you have after that, which is just super, super crazy.
Get a chill down your spine.
Yeah, right? Like, oh.
Do you know what it does to you, James? When you're hated, picked on, spit on, just because of the way you look, after you've been laughed at your whole friggin' life, don't get all holy on me, James. This town called you too. You and me are the same. We're not like other people. Don't you know that? Let's party!
And that marks the end of our first episode on Silent Hill 2. I think this might be our very first three-parter, but I promise every bit is just as juicy as this first one. Our guest today was Stevie Ray Drawn, freelance illustrator extraordinaire, and you can find more of her work at stevierayddrawn.com, and that is spelled S-T-E-V-I-E. RAEDRAWN.com. And then she is on Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon, all of the same name.
The Deep Dive podcast is brought to you by PVTV, and you can find us at deepdivecast.com, as well as on Twitter and Instagram at Deep Dive Cast. If you like what you hear, please consider rating and reviewing the show on iTunes. You can also become a patron of the show by visiting us at deepdivecast.com/support. Patrons receive various perks like monthly black and white wallpapers, high quality versions of each episode, bonus episode content, and of course, yes, my favorite part, the knowledge that you directly are keeping the Deep Dive afloat. And speaking of keeping the Deep Dive afloat, now's the time to shout out two of our patrons, Vardis and Driving Me Spare. Thank you both so much for your support. And this joke's for you. What do you call two octopuses that look exactly the same? Identical.
I'm sorry.
The Deep Dive podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.